Hi, this is Alonzo Bowden. Welcome to episode 82 of my podcast, Who's Paying Attention? Man, there's a lot going on this week. A lot of tragedy in the news, but there's always some funny in the news too. So let's see if we can cover both. I don't know what to open with. There's two huge stories. More black kids got killed by cops this week, and I don't know, is that even a big story anymore, or is that just business as usual? I honestly don't know. I can't say. But anyway, we've got that, and we've got Robin Williams tragically committing suicide, and I definitely want to talk about that and give my 2 cents. And part of my 2 cents is there have been too many comics giving their 2 cents. But anyway, let's start with the sad, and it really is sad, that another, I don't even know where to go with this, you know, it's so much. It's so ordinary now that when you hear the story, well, I'll tell you what I wrote. I posted about this. I posted about, you know, Michael Brown, the black kid who was killed in Missouri, and that was followed literally the next week by Azelle Ford, another unarmed black man killed by the police in Los Angeles. We know there was a man choked to death by the NYPD, and on and on. And I said that I guess this is the summer replacement for school shootings, because it's just as ridiculous and it's just as accepted by our society. I don't know what the solution is. You know, it's unbelievable that now in 2014, cops are still killing black kids like they did in the 60s. Like the days of lynching, you know, when a young black male could be killed for looking at a white woman. I wish it had changed. And in a lot of ways it has changed, but in too many ways it hasn't changed. There's too many people to just don't even get it. You know, when I posted about this on my Facebook page, it was really, this is one of the funny ones to me. And when I say funny, I mean funny because it's unbelievable. But this guy posted that, well, 90% of murders are black on black, which I don't know if that's true or not. But he said, so what's the difference if the cops do it? Really? Like that? But see, that's the thinking. That's where we're at. That, you know, well, he just killed a black kid. It wasn't like he killed, you know, a person. I said this before. I said this during the Trayvon Martin case. Black youth, I'm gonna put the age at 25 and under. You obviously the most dangerous people on earth and must be killed immediately upon sight. Everyone is scared of them, and now even armed police are scared of unarmed black teens. You know, they talk about Michael Brown attacked the cop in the cop car, which, stop and think about that for a minute, okay? Stop and think about that for a minute and tell yourself, ask yourself, in what parallel universe would that happen? That would anyone attack a cop in the cop car? But say he did. Why was he shot leaving? You know, he wasn't in the cop car when he got shot. It wasn't like they were wrestling for the gun and he got shot in the car. The shooting was away from the car. And then this kid in Los Angeles, apparently everyone in the neighborhood knew that this kid had mental issues. He was one of those people that wandered around the neighborhood, maybe talking to himself or whatever. We all know the type. Let's not pretend we don't. And some cop decided he needed to shoot him. And you know, and this thing of, well, we're not going to put the, you know, in Missouri, we're not going to give the cop's name because there's death threats. People are mad at him. Really? Really? Well, you know why we know Michael Brown's name? Because the cop killed him. Not a death threat, because the cop killed him. That's why we know his name. So this, I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, but I will say this to anyone who thinks that, you know, this is okay, this is business as usual. This, imagine, and I have a nephew who's 21, and I talk with him, and when I was his age, someone told me, it was actually a cop in L.A. who told me to be careful around LAPD, but imagine having to teach your kids to be afraid of the police, because that's what it's like if you're raising a young black male or a young Latino male or a young male of any minority of any color. You have to teach him to be afraid of the police, just like he's going to be afraid of gangbangers or of any other threat. The police are equally threatening. And don't say that's an exaggeration, and don't say it's not true. The police are as dangerous to a young black man as any danger in the streets. The police are as dangerous to a young black man as any danger in the streets. Are there good cops? Yes, there are good cops. But where are they when this happens? Where are the good cops saying, yo, man, this is ridiculous. This cop shot an unarmed black kid. That was wrong. It makes us all look bad. I haven't heard that cop. I've heard a lot of coverage. I've heard a lot of protection, the leadership in that police department trying to protect this cop. And you know what? It'll go away. You know why? Because these are black kids getting shot. They're not patriots like Cliven Bundy and his people who actually pointed guns at government officials and law enforcement officers. Now imagine that. Now think about this. Think about the protests that are going on in Missouri and how the cops are standing out there in full riot gear, ready to attack at a moment's notice, breaking up protests, sending people home, arresting people, blah, blah, blah. When you look at the Cliven Bundy standoff in Nevada, he didn't just have armed people. He had armed people fly in from around the country and set up barricades and point rifles at the police. Nothing happened. No one arrested. No one arrested. No one hurt. Nothing. Because that was a protest. Whereas black people protesting another murder of a black child by the police, that's an angry, violent mob. And you really should see the coverage from foreign press. I was watching the BBC cover this story, and it's literally, you know how we cover violence in the third world, how we show pictures of Iraq or some other war-torn area? That's the way they're showing Missouri in the United States, that it's a torn apart, you know, racially torn area. And I don't know. I say I don't know because there's no real solution, and I don't believe there's a real desire for a solution. I really don't. And don't get me wrong, I'm not sitting up here saying all white people are bad or anything like that. No. But I'm saying that we have a serious problem that people absolutely refuse to look at honestly. And people refuse to look at the fact and accept the fact that the police are wrong and the police are a gang. Back in the days of the Crips and the Bloods fighting in L.A., they always said there was a third gang involved, and that was the LAPD. And everyone who says it's not true, how many kids have to get shot before you say, hey, wait a minute, maybe the police are wrong in this? I wish I had a solution. I wish I had a joke. I really don't. There's no joke to be made. The comparison to school shootings was meant to be ironic, not meant to be funny. But you know, we'll find something else, and it'll be business as usual, and we'll forget about this and move on, because that's what we do. It won't change. We'll just forget about it. There'll be a bigger story on the other line. The other tragedy that I want to talk about, and it is tragedy, is Robin Williams. Robin Williams, as everybody knows, committed suicide this past week. His depression, or maybe his drug addiction, whatever it was, got to him when he was alone in that space. He killed himself, and that's horribly sad. And it's sad for him. It's sad for his family. It's sad for all the fans and all the people, you know, who love what he did. And it's definitely sad for the comic community. But I got to say, the one thing I can't handle is any more comics making it about them. Listen, this is Robin Williams and his family. This isn't about us. Do comics suffer from depression? Yeah, we do. We all do. Listen, my arms are covered with tattoos of sad clowns and angry jesters. You know why? Because that's the other side of the coin. That's the thing. If you want to be funny, you know, the sad that leads to the funny, the pain leads to the funny, the anger leads to the funny. It's the other side of the coin, and I wouldn't trade it. And you know something? Most comics wouldn't trade it. I don't know any real comics that would trade it. And it's not just comics. Listen, I have a friend who's a musician, and he's a brilliant musician, and he's deaf in one ear. And doctors said, we can fix your other ear. And he said, no, I can't risk it, because what if I lose F sharp? What he meant was, what if he loses a note? What if he loses that music that he hears in his head because suddenly his hearing has changed? He wouldn't risk that. Well, I wouldn't risk the funny. I am 26 years in recovery from drug addiction. I was a crackhead. I'm an alcoholic. You know, I suffer bouts of depression. Loneliness comes with the job and on. And you name a sad situation, I'm a comic. I got it. We got it. But you know something? That goes with the territory. I am not looking for sympathy here. I am not making this about me. Robin Williams is a tragic situation, but it's what comics live with. Sad to say this, but when people ask me about it right after it happened, I said, I'm never surprised when a comic commits suicide. I'm never surprised by that, because we're always on that line, right? So that's what happens. It's tragic, but not shocking, not surprising. And I am so tired of comics making it about us, because it's not. And here's the thing. I don't want a comic audience looking at me saying, ooh, don't laugh. He's hurting inside. Good. Let me keep hurting inside. As long as you're laughing, we're good. All right? So that's all I'm going to say about that. I'm going to move on. I'm going to move on, because we got other things going on. Hey, people, we're back in Iraq. And you know, I am so sad to hear about this. I don't know what the solution is over there. I honestly don't know what the solution is to peace in the Middle East. I know that you were expecting me to know. I know you were, after thousands of years of war in various factions in the Middle East, you were expecting me, a stand-up comic from Los Angeles to from New York also, because New York gets mad, very sensitive. But you were expecting me to have a solution for peace in the Middle East. I got nothing. But I hate the fact that we're going back into Iraq in a military way. Is it right or is it wrong? I don't know. Honestly, there's so much nuance over there. Part of the problem is we there's so much of the culture that we don't understand. The jihadists are definitely wrong and a threat to the people of Iraq. ISIS is definitely a threat to the people of Iraq, and on a bigger scale, a threat to the world with terrorism. Will this military action, these military advisors, CIA, will they make a difference? I don't know. But this is the attempt. good old John McCain just won't let it go. Like, even now, even though President Barack Obama has taken military action in Iraq, McCain's like, well, it's still not enough. Damn it. Why can't we have a good old-fashioned war going on? Unbelievable. Barack Obama's statement. You know the president's getting fed up when the policy is, well, first thing we're going to do is avoid doing stupid shit. Like, he just... I love that. I love that. You know, Hillary Clinton said that's not a policy. I think that's a brilliant policy. All right, first of all, let's avoid doing stupid shit. That should be the opening of every political speech, of every political statement, of every political idea should open with, first thing, we're going to avoid stupid shit. I think that's a good policy. Sorry, Ms. Clinton, I'll vote for you next election, but I hope you avoid stupid shit when you become president. Moving right along, let's stay in the blame it on Obama, because you know that's one of my favorite topics that, you know. They're mad at Barack Obama because right now he's in the midst of a 2-week vacation in Martha's Vineyard. And the Republicans, they were really mad at him as they were leaving Congress for their 5-week vacation back home, you know, and of course, we've all forgotten George Bush's month. Like, George used to take every August off because he had to clear brush. It wasn't that long ago. You remember every August, George Bush was clearing brush on the ranch. Now, since he's retired, since he's no longer president, haven't seen him clearing any brush. He's been spending his time in Dallas and going to baseball games. Haven't seen him on the ranch, but back when he was president, that brush needed to be cleared every August. But that was okay. Barack Obama taking a 2-week vacation obviously makes him the worst president in history and blah, 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 blah. So we'll just file that under, blame it on Obama. And while we're blaming Barack Obama for stuff, let's look at this story. I saw this. It was in USA Today, which means there were color pictures and a pie chart. But anyway, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, is studying an area in the Appalachians up in Kentucky because they said that the health problems up there are a small example of where this country's heading, what's going on. And they looked at a woman, Alicia Blankenbecker, forgive me if I mispronounce that, but she's got diabetes. It's stealing her eyesight, impairing her kidneys, damaging her nerves so she can barely walk, and she's only 48. Now, she is obese. She's a very large woman, and she's suffering. They said in this article, Appalachia, like some blighted urban areas and Native American reservations, mixes several ingredients: poor health, doctor shortage, access to care problem, unhealthy lifestyles, low education, insidious poverty, and these things add up to bad health. But here's a difference in the Appalachians, and they voted against health care. You see, these are those hardcore Republicans who can't stand Barack Obama, not because of race, because of policy. And they voted against him, and they voted against health care, and they're sitting up there sadly dying, okay, dying because they don't have health care. This woman had a situation where she had to cut her insulin and went into insulin shock but was afraid to go to the hospital because she didn't have health insurance. But when it came time to vote, they vote against Barack Obama and they vote against that health care policy, as always, in the name of Jesus. So I don't feel sorry for him. I don't feel sorry for you. If you are poor, if you are poorly educated, if you don't have health care, if you don't have an opportunity for health care, and you vote against health care, and you support rich Republican congressmen who vote against health care, then I don't feel sorry for you. What the hell is wrong with you? What the hell is wrong with you? You hate the black man that much that you vote against your own health, that you literally will, as they say, this woman is losing her eyesight, the woman can't walk, but I can crawl to the polls to vote against him. Sorry, but too bad. That's just how it goes. Am I unsympathetic? Yes, I am unsympathetic to that situation. That's a choice, okay? That is a choice. Continuing and Alonzo, why you always pick on the right wing? Well, here's why. Here's why, because, well, this is actually a good story. Kudos to this woman for pulling out. Governor Mary Fallon, the governor of Oklahoma, was scheduled to be a guest speaker at a GOP fundraiser in Garvin County, and she was going to show up, and it was the Garvin County bean feed, and there was a little hint to what's going on, because in the upper corner of the flyer was a dancing bean wearing a sombrero, so we kind of know right then where this is going. But for $20, you get a great meal of beans, cornbread, drinks, and dessert, and the musings of great speaker Governor Fallon. Additionally, guests would be treated to great fun and fellowship, which would consist of discussing issues with fellow conservatives and finding out some things you may not know about the NRA, Planned Parenthood, and of course, the Ku Klux Klan and other organizations. Yeah, they kind of slipped that Klan thing in there. And to her credit, the governor saw that and said, no, I'm not coming. But that's where it is. It's that open. It's that open that, you know, come on down, have some beans. Let's talk about the Klan. What year is this? Oh, yeah, 2014. Sorry, I thought it was 1914. Did I say that? I thought it was 1865. Oh, well. Thank God she didn't go. Good for her. But it goes on. And while we're on the topic of does hypocrite even describe this one? A church leader in Roche, Missouri, is out of a job for being arrested for allegedly trying to arrange a sexual encounter with a dog. That's right. Gerald Hill was arrested on suspicion of attempted unlawful sex with an animal. And now, that's an interesting charge. That like, that's a law. Attempted unlawful sex with an animal. Does that mean that it's okay if it's lawful sex with an animal? I don't know. But you see, here's another one of these evangelicals. And again, I'm not lumping all Christians into this category, but you know there's a large group. They hate the gay people, right? Because if you're gay, what's next? Sex with animals. How do we know? Well, we took a shot at it. We tried to take, and we got caught. This guy was actually trying to find animals for sex on Craigslist. That's how he got caught. An undercover detective contacted Hill by email and offered a dog for sex, and they arranged a meeting in Columbia. And when Hill arrived, he was arrested. So this guy, like, you remember that show on NBC, To Catch a Predator, when they would have a little, you know, they had an adult who sounded like a teenage girl arrange sex with these guys, and they would show up at the house and the cameras would be there. This guy went on Craigslist to solicit sex with a dog. Now, does that mean he thinks dogs read Craigslist, or does he think there's some dog owners that are really mean? Like, I don't even know what the logic is behind that, but son of a bitch, if he didn't give it a shot. You know what this guy needs to avoid? Sketchy neighborhoods. You know why? There's an app for that. How is that for a smooth transition? I don't know if you've heard about this one. There's an app called Sketch Factor, and it was founded by Daniel Harrington and Allison McGuire. Now, the interesting thing about this is these are two young white millennials who they've lived in the gentrified neighborhoods. For those who don't know what that means, there are certain neighborhoods. Let's take New York, for example. There are parts of Brooklyn and Harlem that white people who couldn't afford to live in Manhattan moved into these areas and changed them. And these areas were historically minority, black, Puerto Rican, what have you. And they bought the house cheap. This is how you do it. You buy the housing cheap, and then you start rehabbing the housing, and you price the people who originally lived there out of the neighborhood. Well, to avoid encountering people who lived in these neighborhoods before they moved in, these guys created the Sketch Factor app, and you can go on the app and list the neighborhood as sketchy. What does that mean? It means that we gentrified it, but some of those original people are still there. So they created this app, and they said it has nothing to do with race. Yeah, okay. But they just wanted to avoid sketchy areas. You don't want to get in an elevator with a sketchy-looking person or this or that. The hilarious part about this, a news crew in Washington, D.C. went to one of these sketchy neighborhoods investigating the app, and their van got robbed. Again, I don't feel sorry for you. I don't feel sorry for you. No, when you go into a neighborhood and you start saying, hey, you know, this neighborhood is known as sketchy. There's an app that says this is a bad neighborhood, and your ass deserves to be robbed. You went looking for trouble and you found it. So good. Good. That neighborhood's not sketchy. That neighborhood, just you stay the hell out of it. All right. Just it's like being a black teenager around a cop. You know, it's hey, he had to shoot him. They had to rob your van. That's just how it goes. Man, what has happened to our society that I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know if we've come together and we're drifting farther apart or if we never came together at all. But I do have something to say about that, and I still, believe it or not, I still have some hope, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But first, I have to tell you And you know where I stand on this, and you know how happy I am about this story. The NCAA lost the lawsuit. Ed O'Bannon won the lawsuit. Yeah, Ed O'Bannon was a college basketball star who sued the NCAA for using his likeness in video games and advertisements and making a ton of money off of it, and the players don't get a dime. And they said, well, you were playing it. He said, nope, I haven't played college ball in 10 years or 15 years or however long it's been since he was in college, but they still use his likeness, so they have to pay him. And the court agreed. Now, this is going to be big because what the court has opened the door, they're going to have to start paying college athletes, basically. That's what it means. That means the NFL and the NBA are going to lose their free minor league system. That means the schools and the coaches and the street agents and the sneaker companies and everyone else who's making billions and TV networks, yeah, billions off of these college kids are going to have to start sharing the wealth. They're going to have to come up with a formula to pay these kids. No more of that nonsense about, well, you're getting a scholarship and that has value. Really? That value of that scholarship doesn't come near the value of what you make off of these star players. Okay, so you're going to have to come up with a way to start paying them because they won the lawsuit, and that's good. I don't know the formula. They'll come up with a formula. Even once they've come up with the formula, the kids will still be getting screwed, but maybe they'll be getting screwed just a little less. Are college athletics supposed to be amateur? Yeah, they are. If you're on the water polo team, if you're on the lacrosse team, if you run, you know, the 5K run in the track team, you're an amateur. You're not making any money. But if you play college football and you're in the Rose Bowl where your school gets $15 million for playing in that game, if you're a college basketball player and you're involved in the NCAA tournament, which CBS has paid $1 billion to the colleges to televise, yeah, you're a pro, and you deserve to get paid, and thankfully, you will. Finally, I'm going to go out on a note. You know, I talk about these things of separation. I talk about the police shooting black kids. I talk about this sketchy neighborhood app to avoid minorities. That sketchy neighborhood app is nothing more than modern-day redlining. That's all it is. I talk about the political rally, which, you know, slips the Klan in there. But there's hope. And I was at Sturgis this year. For those who don't know, Sturgis is the biggest motorcycle rally in the country, maybe the biggest one in the world. I don't know. Literally hundreds of thousands of people show up for this thing. I can't begin to describe the scope of Sturgis. It takes over the towns of Sturgis, Deadwood, Keystone, Rapid City, literally takes over towns throughout South Dakota. Campground becomes a population of 30,000 in one campground. It becomes a city in unto itself. The population of the state may double during this week. I don't even know because I don't know the population of South Dakota, but I do know that the van driver told us there are four times as many cows as people in South Dakota. So Indian Motorcycles was nice enough to invite me to Sturgis. They were going to debut a new bike. They were going to let me ride it. We were going to tour around, see some of the beautiful riding there and so on. I was a little nervous because Sturgis is a biker rally. And when I say biker rally, I mean like the Sons of Anarchy, Hell's Angels types. There's a saying in motorcycles called the rubbed rich urban biker, which is the accountant or dentist who puts on all the leather and the assless chaps, which are always wrong, but they put it all on and they act badass and they go to this. Well, part of that culture on the real heavy duty side of the culture is racism. Racism is part of that biker culture. So I've never been to Sturgis, and part of it was because I didn't want to deal with any of that. You know, it's like, let them have their fun. I'm not going. But I was invited, so I went. And you know something? They proved me wrong. The people couldn't have been nicer. I was there with a buddy named Alan Lane, who has an online motorcycle magazine called Sports Bike Inc. We're two black guys walking around. Now, mind you, the population is 99% white. but there were people who literally went out of their way to let us know we were welcome. They were happy to see us, have fun. We laughed some about it. You know, we did some fish out of water jokes. There was a Julie, a representative from Indian, who we just really horrified Julie with some of the jokes we made. But it was a great weekend. It was a lot of fun. And I was happily proven wrong. I will go back to Sturgis. I actually look forward to going back and spending more than a couple of days and seeing more of it. So, yeah, there is hope. But, man, I don't know what to do. Very quickly, my TV pilot, we've pushed the shoot date back to October. There will be more information. I will invite you guys because I want an audience. And this is going to be a really funny panel show. And we're going to talk about a lot of stuff going on. But that's going to be coming up. I am going to be at Hilarities in Cleveland next week, and I am going to be at Tommy T's in Pleasanton, one of my favorite gigs. I love coming up to Tommy's, so I got those shows coming up. I'll be at Hilarities in Cleveland from August 20th to 24th, and then at Tommy T's from August 28th to 31st. So that's how I'm going to finish the summer. I will see you guys out there. I love it when you come to shows. I love it when you say you've been listening to the podcast. Keep laughing. Say a prayer for Robin Williams' soul and for his family. Say a prayer for us as a society. And I'll talk to you soon. It's Alonzo Bowden asking, who's paying attention?
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.